Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. It's a pleasure to see you all here this morning. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, I'd like to welcome you. I would also like to give you a heads up about some of the programs that you'll be hearing in the coming weeks. There will be a schedule up on the Thursday Morning Roundtable website soon, so you can see it there. But right now, just so that you know, Mayor Stephanie Miner will be here next week from the City of Syracuse talking about, you know, in general, it's sort of our annual conversation with the mayor, issues facing the City of Syracuse, and some new things on the agenda. The following week, Ryan McMahon, the chair of the county legislature, will be back. We haven't heard from him in a couple of years, so we'll be talking to him about some county issues and plans within the legislature. The following week, we're going to be swerving a bit, talking about gay marriage and the Christian right, which I thought was, you know, rather timely and relevant given what's been going on with Arizona. I think I read this morning that the governor in Arizona did veto the law that they were calling religious freedom. But so we'll be talking about gay marriage. And then ending the month talking about minimum wage. And that really was tying into the new Onondaga Citizens League study on the employment skills gap. Very interesting. We just had our first study committee meeting this week. If anybody is interested in joining that conversation, again, you don't have to be an expert by any stretch, just somebody who is interested in the issue of labor force, labor economics issues in our community. So that's the next few weeks for you to bone up on. Right now, it is my pleasure to ask Rachel May, one of our TMR members and a member of the OCRA board, to introduce today's guest speakers. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you, Sandra, and good morning, everybody. I used to think that anyone who did the Ironman triathlon was necessarily insane. But then I found out that Mark Donnelly is an Ironman, and Mark is probably the most level-headed, grounded person I know, so he completely debunked that prejudice for me, so thank you, Mark, for doing that. Mark was the chair of the OCRA board when I joined the board in 2007. He volunteered as on the board and for 2 years as chair, but on the board for 10 years, which is, it's a big commitment. So, and what impressed me when I came on the board was his extraordinary dedication to the agency and also the humane and kind of moral way he approached issues, so that he was always thinking about the impact on people at the agency, the impact on people in the community, and the impact on the environment as well. Mark was, it was hard to believe at the time, but he also had a day job at the Carrier Corporation, where he was a production and facilities manager. He worked there for 31 years until we lured him away to become the executive director of OCRA 2 years ago. And as executive director, he has focused a laser eye on trying to reduce costs and improve efficiencies, but always with that wonderful moral compass right there, always thinking about how is this going to impact people, how is this going to affect the community and the environment. So I think he was a wonderful choice for executive director, and we count on him to always be trying to do the right thing. Chris Dodson joined the board a couple years after I did. I think he's the youngest member of the board by a wide margin, but he is also one of the most respected members of the board, both because he brings all kinds of insight and creativity to thinking about the problems facing OCRA, and because of the verve with which he expresses himself, whether it be making a complex argument or giving a boring committee report. He does it all with a lot of style. Chris is the Associate Director of the Environmental Finance Center down at the Center of Excellence. He's one of the brains behind the Save the Rain program here in the county. He also, I don't know how, because it's a big commitment to be on the OCRA board, but he's also on the boards of the University Neighborhood Preservation Association and CNY Jazz, and an up-and-coming leader in this community. So you're in great hands for learning about the future of OCRA here. So please join me in welcoming Mark and Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel, for that flattering introduction. In addition to everything that Rachel said I do, I'm also a visiting professor at ESF. This semester I'm teaching public speaking, so I'm going to be my own worst critic this morning. And since I'm teaching later today, I'm also going to use my timer, so I can give Mark as much time as possible to talk about the complexities of the OCRA system and the proposal to work with Cortland County. It's also flattering that Rachel said that I am by far the youngest member of the OCRA board. Thank you, Rachel. I'm actually older than I look, and I think Matt Millay might be the youngest by a few months. So, anyways, oh, yes, slide advancer. Tip number one to public presentation for my students later. All right, so I am the vice chair. I am the vice chair of the OCRA board. Mike Riley, who was scheduled to come this morning, sends his regrets. He's a CPA. I guess they're busy this time of year. Something about taxes. So for those of you who don't know, OCRA is a public benefit corporation set up to help this community, Onondaga County, better manage its solid waste. So when you throw it away, and think about that term, the semantics of throw it away. Away, where's away? Where does it go? It goes into the OCRA system. OCRA is really managed by very competent staff. Mark is our executive director. But is overseen by a 15-person appointed board, appointed by largely the county and the city and a couple of other municipalities. The really crucial thing to know, I think, about OCRA is that we are kind of a facilitator. We make sure that the trash that you put out on the curb gets picked up, all of the recyclables get diverted, and that we manage those contracts, manage those relationships between the municipalities, the haulers, and Covanta, the operator of the waste energy facility. The OCRA system, kind of before the DEC and EPA came up with the bright idea of the solid waste management hierarchy, which you see here, OCRA was already doing this. We were reducing as much as possible through diversion. I am not doing good at that. Reducing as much as possible through diversion of organics, of recyclable materials, and hazardous waste through some of the programs I'll talk about in a minute. Recycling, certainly, our compost program, which I'll mention in a minute. And then once we do all of those things, reduce the amount of waste as much as possible through diversion, recover energy from that waste, everything has energy in it that can be pulled out and used, recovered and used in other places. And then what remains is sent to a landfill, the things that we can't do anything else with. And so this looks a little bit complex, but I'll break it down for you. It's essentially a chart of inputs and outputs. You notice the inputs here, we have about 563,000 tons of trash, whether it's recyclables, whether it's C&D, which is an acronym. I love acronyms. That means essentially construction and demolition debris, wood, shingles, brick, concrete, metal, things that we, when we tear down buildings and renovate our homes, that kind of stuff. Trash, the stuff you put out at the curb that you don't put in the blue bin. And then food and yard waste. Again, this is part of our composting program, together with big partners like Syracuse University, Wegmans, the Marcellus School District, and a few others who have committed to diverting their food waste, their food scraps, and sending them into the okra system to be made into compost that you can then pick up and take home and put in your tomato garden. So that's the 563,000 tons. They go to different facilities depending on what they are. A private MRF. A MRF is a recycling facility. It's where the glass, the paper, the plastics all go to be sorted and sent into the market for to be processed into other materials. Transfer stations owned by Okra, essentially where trash goes, sometimes the heavy appliances, mattresses, construction and demolition debris go there to be sorted and separated and then sent to their appropriate endpoint. The waste energy facility is where most of our trash goes. And then our new compost site, the Amboy site in Camillus. At the end of the day, after everything's sorted and separated, we have 80,000 tons of ash and 10,000 tons of non-processable construction and demolition debris. You can't recycle concrete very easily. You can't burn it. It has to be landfilled. The ash also goes to a landfill. We do have a beneficial use determination, a BUD, that to use that ash for daily cover at landfills. And that's primarily what that ash is used for. Some of the services that help Okra really reach these goals of diversion, of reducing that waste before we send it to be processed, are listed here. We all have a blue bin, I hope. If you're like me, sorry, Mark, you might have four. I don't know how I ended up with four, but I have four. I use two of them at least every week. We put out two full blue bins and one kitchen-sized trash bag of non-recyclables. I'm obviously committed to recycling, but I think that with Okra, with that kind of almost marketing tool, a blue bin is in some ways a marketing tool and a daily reminder for all of us to recycle. It helps all of us as individuals contribute to that goal of reducing that waste. So that's the blue bin. Hazardous household waste collections, we're, I think, able to do that Monday through Friday every day of the year now, right?
Absolutely. 6:30 in the morning till 6 in the evening.
So you have household hazardous waste. There's a place over on Hiawatha Boulevard. You can take it and drop it off. Mercury thermometers, light bulbs, fluorescent light bulbs, all of these things, Okra has programs to help you remove those from the waste stream and take them to be processed as appropriate based on what those materials are. You probably have, if not participated in, certainly heard of our annual Earth Day litter cleanup. Thousands of people helping us clean up our community every year and collecting millions of pounds of trash in the last 18 years. So this is one of, in my opinion, one of our pride and joy is our composting facility, really our composting facility as a community. This is the largest food scrap composting facility in New York State, I think one of two permitted. We're really progressive and leaders looking at food waste, not as waste, but as a material that can be reused and potentially sold and be a revenue generator as a compost product. I think we're going to have a public open house sometime in May.
May 7th.
This is in Amboy, in the town of Camillus. Come out, check it out, see what this facility is about, what it does, and maybe how you can take advantage of it. In order to make Okra's system work, we have all these programs, but we also have to recognize the people in the community that do great work, that whose visions are aligned with Okra, with the goals of the community for our solid waste management. And one of the ways we do that is through the Blue Ribbon Recycler Program, really acknowledging the good activities of businesses throughout the community every year. We have businesses that receive this award. And it becomes a public education tool as well. We have educators at Okra that will go into businesses and help them be better recyclers, help them reduce their impact on the environment by recycling all of their office waste. And we do the same thing in schools. These folks in schools are going to come home and tell their parents, hey, you need to recycle. You need to put those things in the blue bin. And those same children are the ones who are going to be doing that 20 years from now. So the public education is certainly a very large piece of what Okra does for the county. And we shouldn't underestimate the importance of that. And they're out there every day in our businesses and our schools, encouraging recycling and increasing our recycling rates. And I think this speaks for itself, but the results are really important and in some ways hard to quantify. And this is my last slide, but really looking at that system that we talked about a few slides ago, going through those programs, talking about the ways that we encourage folks to recycle, promote recycling, educate businesses, apartment complexes and schools about how to better recycle and about the Okra system. That's how we get to end you using your compost bin, your recycling bin. This is how we get to 61% recycling in our community. So with that, that's my last slide. I'm going to turn it over to Mark, and he can get into more of the complexities of Okra and our programs.
Thank you so much, Chris. Chris did a great job there on the school education programs. What's important to remember is we focus on grades 3 through 6. I joke to the chagrin of my staff that it's the Philip Morris model. If you get them young, you got them for life. Those children are great. They actually go home and train their parents. So we love the passion that they have, but we also change the lives of those around them, the teachers and the custodial staffs. And we have found it extremely rewarding to see how quickly they buy on to the programs. Now we're going to talk about the business side of it a little bit before we get into some of the issues that are so common in the newspapers today. Okra's revenues primarily come from electric sales and our tipping fees. They're the two big pieces of the pie there. It's basically $30 million of our $34 million in revenue. Our expense side, coincidentally, we're a public benefit corporation. We're not there to make a profit. The number's roughly the same. Our expenses last year were $500,000 off from our revenue stream, which is an issue for us. Waste to energy, again, 42.3% debt service. That's the bonds that we pay, and pay special attention to that because the bonds create ownership of the revenue stream, and that's what allows us to have flow control. But those two items right there is where we get our money for all of our robust green programs that we run that bring us that extremely high recycling rate that's at roughly 61%, which is curbside, commercial, and industrial. A little bit about waste to energy, big item in the newspapers today. Present situation is that we have a joint ownership, well, Okra owns it, and we pay the revenue bonds on that, which allows a number of things to happen. First and foremost, if we own the plant through a bonding program, we own the revenue stream and the obligation on the bonds. That allows the county ledge to have what we call legislative flow control, and that's very important. Talk about keeping the borders of Onondaga closed to importation. That's the mechanism that does that. Now, I'd like to go through a couple of scenarios with you. First of all, I'd like you to think of a public/private ownership model. With the legal capability to flow control material to the facility, our county legislature actually has control. They allow us to have flow control so that we can cause the material to come to us to pay the revenues that I just described. But they also can create source separation laws and things like that that make the Okra system work. In other words, Onondaga County is handling its solid waste system, which goes far beyond trash, responsibly. Current law prohibits
out-of-county waste unless the legislature makes an exception. They have that right. Now I'd like you to fast forward to private ownership of the facility. This would be Covanta's ownership. The service agreement, the market rate agreement that we have today would allow that if we don't negotiate a contract that we prefer. And when I say we prefer, for the benefit of Onondaga County. Opening up the borders to waste from other areas would allow not only municipal solid waste to come in, it would maximize the output of the facility, which would be 361,000 tons, but it would also bring in light industrial, non-hazardous waste to the facility. The issue that we have with that is the characterization of that waste would be varied, where we know today with the composition of the municipal solid waste is that we process through there today. So that variable is not something that we want. Bringing material in from outside of our borders that's not controlled by the county legislature is not supported by our county officials, nor our board of directors or the OCRA staff. Maintaining a structure that we have today, augmented with the Cortland trash, is the environmentally responsible solution. This chart is important because it shows you the advantages of the two options. On the ownership side, on these two columns, if you look at what we believe to be important, restricting waste importation, oversight, this is so important. I'm so proud of our agency engineer. When the New York State DEC approves something, it's still got to get through her. You'd rather deal with the DEC. She's tough. By the way, I'd like to introduce Amy Miller. I won't point the laser at you. When we get to the technical questions, I have the privilege of Amy's support. So thank you, Amy. We have the ability to set the trash fees. We work very hard to keep our trash fees reasonable for our municipalities, our haulers, and our citizens. The need for an intermunicipal agreement with Cortland, and we'll talk about that, and that would be supporting the private ownership side of it, debt burden. We really want to own that debt burden so we can call the shots. When I say we, it comes from the county legislature and the county executive's office on down to OCRA. We're there to serve. And to mitigate the waste-to-energy ownership risks, one of them being, let's control those emissions. Let's control what comes in and what comes out. If you notice on the two right-hand columns, we're devoid of all those privileges. Private ownership, interstate commerce protection for them allows them a lot of freedom. Let's talk a little bit about the Cortland background. Oakland wasn't involved in this. OCRA was approached by Cortland County with this innovative idea for an intermunicipal agreement. The reason they did that is their landfill cell was maturing. They needed to decide what they want to do, and truthfully, they were upside down financially. We're always looking for ways to be more cost-effective at OCRA. And right now, if you check on the DEC's website and that, you'll find that whether it's a landfill or waste to energy, municipal solid waste is down about 15%. It's an important number. We were challenged by the county executive's office and the county legislature to see if there was any viability to Cortland's general proposal. We investigated it for several months and found indeed that there is a potential for this to be a symbiotic relationship beneficial to both counties. We're still finalizing our negotiations, concepts, and environmental issues that we would both have, and we are definitely having seeker comment periods in both counties. The program basics, we would send to them 80 to 90,000 tons of ash, which is our byproduct that you saw in Chris's chart earlier, that comes from the waste-to-energy facility after it's created energy. It has to go somewhere. It's inert. It passes all TCLP tests. And Cortland is interested in building a monofill, an ash landfill, where they could put their material. What's the advantage of that for them? Absolutely zero methane gas, which is a greenhouse gas material emitting from there. They would need no gas capture. What we would do is we'd send 25,000 or backhaul 25,000 tons of their trash, roughly, plus or minus, to our facility to convert it to energy in a much more environmentally friendly way than landfilling, where it would continue to emit greenhouse gases. The first 25,000 tons, today we're talking with them about being an even swap. After that, we would pay a what we call a tip fee, the ability to dispose in their permitted landfill at a negotiated rate, which has still not been determined. One might ask, is Cortland County's waste as clean as ours? And clean is a good term, because all those things you saw on Chris's slide, thermometers, mercury thermostats, button batteries, and all those things, they do show up in our emissions. So we work very hard with the money that we make from processing materials to keep all those things out of the waste stream so they don't show up in the emissions. We don't want them. Yeah, the answer to that is yes, they have a relatively clean waste stream. Could they be better? Yes. Could we be better? Yes. They have a single stream recycling program. They have their own material recycling facility, and they have many of the same robust programs as ours. Where we would help them out is in public education and possibly helping them set up some programs that today are not as robust as ours but could be in the future. But believe me, their curbside recycling is within a percentage of ours. It meets the norms standards. Their commercial recycling and industrial recycling is pretty darn good. The benefits. There's no doubt that a working landfill emits more emits greenhouse gases on a regular basis. You see that many have gas capture systems, and all new ones will. Those are only so efficient. They will still emit greenhouse gases. The program that we are proposing, we would save 2 million pounds of greenhouse gas per year in transport alone. That's half our fuel, because it's roughly half the distance, within a mile or two. And again, 2 million pounds of greenhouse gases. With the all-in calculation for the greenhouse gases not being emitted from a landfill in Cortland County in their new cell, it would be the equivalent of taking 17,300 cars off the road. That's each year. That's not a one-shot deal. That's huge. I would defy anybody to find a new greenhouse gas program that not only pays you, but takes that kind of emissions out of our air basin. Financially, there's obviously a financial component here. We do cut our ash transport in half, therefore our costs. Most people don't know it, but we pay $60,000 a year just to go down the thruway to High Acres near Rochester to dispose of our ash as a beneficial use cover at their landfill. So even though we're doing that today, it's still a beneficial use under the DEC terms. Otherwise, they would mine soils to cap their landfills on a daily basis. We increase our electric revenue. That's important for us so that we can continue to run our green programs. Projections today, and it's a coincidence, it's not something that we modeled, would be roughly $1 million savings for Okra. We would generate no revenue for it. But Cortland would generate a revenue for it, and that would be roughly $1 million. And it's volume dependent and also based on some of the operational efficiencies that both could create. Operationally, we would have much more use out of our fleet vehicles. Fleet vehicles for us are expensive. We do millions of miles per year, and the maintenance on them, especially as the trucks get more and more high-tech with reducing their emissions, they become more and more expensive to repair. It's a big deal for us. It's a large part of our budget. How many know of a capital or a backhaul that's productive today? Most of the time a truck goes somewhere and it comes back empty. What we're proposing is a useful backhaul. That 25,000 tons of material come back would be processed, relieving Cortland of a GHG-producing landfill and allowing us to convert it to energy. And of course, the facility runs better when the boilers are running hot, and the efficiency therefore would go up. The ultimate goal. It's important here that we keep our eye on the prize. With or without OCRA, the waste-to-energy facility will be in operation for 20-plus years. They have that contractual right today. So being a privately held business, they're going to maximize it at 361,350 tons. What we would rather do is have control on that. Privately held, they're protected by interstate commerce laws. Trash would be imported with no legislative approval. The Cortland proposal gives us a better chance of negotiating a good deal with Covina, which allows us to retain our closed borders. Our current permit, again, is 361,000 tons. What we have today, and has been a norm since about 2009 when we had the economic crisis, which we haven't recovered from yet, 315,000 tons. If you do the math, 315 plus the 25 would be about 340,000 tons, which gives us room for growth. In order to reach an agreement with Covina, where the facility will continue to operate under public and private ownership, it is necessary to use more of the facility's capacity. Any business, any equipment asset that you have needs to be maximized in its utilization to get your best payback on it. Accepting Cortland's trash is the best alternative for maintaining local control and oversight of the facility, which is also environmental oversight, and maintaining our community's robust green programs. The trash rash concept is a significant environmental GHG enhancement for DEC Region 7. And with that, I close, and Chris and I open for questions.
Thank you. And if we might, we'll put this PowerPoint on the TMR website. So if anyone is interested in those numbers. I'm not sure if any of your slides got at this. I was thinking about a few years ago, the Onondaga Citizens League did a study on what does it mean to be green, and we just touched on waste management. And one of the things that, knowing that this was coming, we talked about how much it costs Onondaga County residents or households, I guess, kind of right now if you broke it down, compared to how other communities fund, say, recycling and education. Have you looked at how much it would, if for some reason OCRA did not operate the facility, we'd have no income to operate recycling. Is that correct? What would happen to recycling and recycling education and all of that stuff?
That is very accurate. If we did not use the concepts that we have today, we would go to landfilling. If you remember the pyramid that Chris showed you, landfilling is the last choice. There would be no restrictions on what could go in there. You'd see the mercury, which, by the way, Mario Cuomo signed a mercury collection program about a month ago, which is law now. But you would see all those materials going to the landfills, which have leachate capture and gas capture and all. And actually, some of the landfills today, I have to admit, are well run. They're not run as well as a waste-to-energy facility at all. They are responsible, they're compliant, but they're not as well run. As far as our basic solid waste in management in the area, a lot of what we have here is people wonder, how do you make up the cost? Roughly one quarter of your bill is our tip fee, and then we use the whole nuclear family model of roughly one ton per family, and statistic analysis of that long ago proved out that that's fairly close. That, for my residential area, Lafayette, is one quarter of my bill. Your hauler for 52 weeks a year comes around for the other 225 bucks a year and hauls your materials away, both your recyclables and your trash. I think that's pretty good value. Now, in our negotiations, we're working really hard to keep a balance between ownership, closing our borders, and a good price for the community. What we hold to be very sacred is our green programs that we run to keep our waste stream clean and be in line with sustainability goals that county and city government have.
I think this is a very complicated issue and very difficult to get a handle on, but a couple of the key concepts I think are very important. One of the issues is the environmental impact of more trash burning at our facility. And even though the facility is very, very efficient, very effective, if we burn more trash, we're going to have more of the environmental pollution. And, you know, that is a question that how do you weigh that as a, you know, alternative against the landfill process? And so can you respond to that?
Yes, we can. Initially, I'm going to respond that historically, and it's all on our website, www.okra.org, we have been above the numbers that we're proposing. And I'm going to defer the technical aspects of this question to Amy Miller, who will explain to you how the correlation between that tonnage and the emissions.
Thank you very much. Just to refer everyone, we have a great frequently asked question document on OCRA's website that tries to speak to this a little bit more. So perhaps that's a good source for people to go back to, but I can certainly explain it as well. The additional 25,000 tons that would be estimated tonnage from Cortland County would represent about 7% of what's currently being processed at the facility. Therefore, although your emission rates will not be increasing, because when we test the facility, we're testing it at maximum capacity. So, and that is what our DEC permits are based on, that maximum testing done. However, that said, the mass rate that's emitted annually, like you mentioned, will be increasing slightly based on an additional 7% of material coming into the county. I have tried to estimate those calculations and compare them to something that provide some insight in this, and so when you compare what's been looked at in the health risk assessment for the facility as kind of the maximum emissions that were determined to be safe for human health and the environment, the increase that we see from taking the additional waste from Cortland County that we would see is very, very minimal as a comparison to the health risk assessment levels. And that is something certainly we will be doing a very detailed calculations on in the environmental impact statement that will be done. So the public will have every opportunity to review those calculations and get more information. But right now, I've done my best to put the information out there in our frequently asked questions.
Thank you, Amy. All right, get over here, and then I'll be back over here. Ed.
When the rock cut plant was built, there was a lot of debate over what kind of emissions there would be. And what I want to know now, these days, what kind of testing you do to assure that the plant operates within appropriate levels?
Amy Miller. Well, I could give you the answer, but on the other hand, I think you want the technically astute answer of the person that actually has oversight of that.
So we have annual stack testing that's done. It takes about 1 week. An independent company is brought in to do the testing, and then an independent lab does the analysis. On top of the annual stack testing, we also have continuous emissions monitoring that does not monitor for every parameter that we do the annual testing for, but it monitors for those that give you an indication as to how the facility is operating, whether they're the goal of the waste-to-energy facility process is very high temperatures such that you have very complete combustion and very minimal byproducts generated as a result of that. 2,000 degree temperatures is one of the key things at the facility that prevents pollution and emissions, in addition to the extensive air pollution control technology that's there. But those are the two main things. In addition, the county health department does some additional sampling in the area as well. But for the facility, those are the main air emissions testing, the annual stack testing that's done, and then the continuous emissions monitoring that's done on, you know, they're doing it right now as we speak. Yeah, we have, based on the rigorous permitting process for this facility here in Onondaga County and the amount of input that people, you know, really felt strongly about when this facility was being permitted, we ended up with one of the strictest permits in the nation here. And we have, you know, been in compliance with our permit. We annually post all of the results right on OCRA's website so the community can go and view them there. And we've generally, for most of the parameters, been at about 20% of our permit limit.
Thank you, Amy.
Please visit the OCRA website to see those. And it's interesting to look at it at what I would call full capacity, which I think we were a little bit over 355,000 tons. And look at the emissions in that particular year and then compare them to where we are today or any year that you so choose. It's all on the website, www.okra.org. And I think you'll be enlightened by the information you can find there.
Thank you.
Hi. As the last president of Recycle First and a person who is very involved in the fight to prevent any incinerator from being built, I want to remind people that the original proposal was much bigger than was actually built, and now we're finding that we were right and we have recycled like we knew the community would so that we don't need the capacity that was ultimately built. My question is, I was very surprised that the board only looked at two options. Did you have an outside consultant, and did you look at the option of how you can close the incinerator, a plan that at the end of X amount of years, when the bonds are paid off, we're done with this thing? Because I believe that we will continue in this community to compost, to recycle, to reduce, and the use and need for this for our community is not there. So again, as board members, why did you only look at two options?
Thanks for the question, Sharon. I've been on the board for about 4 years, maybe 3.5 years. We had, we have standing committees. We actually had a temporary committee called the 2015 committee that actually looked at least six different options for how we would move forward. And we called it the 2015 committee because, as you know, our contract with Covanta expires in that year. So we looked at many different options. The two that Mark shared with you today are essentially the conflating all of those options into the two that are most likely and kind of folding in some of the costs and the benefits of the options that we explored. That committee ran for a full calendar year or 18 months. 2 years? Sorry, the committee had already formed by the time I got onto the board. So we spent 2 years kind of researching and bringing in all kinds of information and resources to look at the full breadth of options that were available. You know, I live right around the corner from here. When I drive back from work down Westcott Street, I see the stack actually peeking over the hill. I live in Outer Comstock. I'd like to have the conversation of thinking beyond incineration, thinking beyond waste to energy. But if you look at all of the communities nationally, there's two things we do with our solid waste. We burn it, or we bury it. The technology, when the technology is there, I think will be the time when this community, when any community, is really ready to have that conversation. It's 2014 right now. Our contract expires in 2015 with Covanta. If that technology doesn't come around in the next, 3 minutes or 3 months, we're not going to be able to look beyond where we are now. I think that, you know, it would be great for us to continue to reduce, recycle, and reuse our waste. And then I think, you know, technology and the continued reduction will really be at that point where this community can have that conversation. So anyway, that's my perspective as a board, since you mentioned, you know, whether or not the board was looking at additional recommendations. I don't know if Amy or Mark have anything else to add to my comment.
I just wanted, since we were talking about time frames, I'm not sure the if there were to be an agreement with Cortland, is there a time frame on that agreement, the life of that agreement?
That is being negotiated. My estimate would be with Cortland?
Yes.
Well, the capacity of their plant would or their landfill would determine that, but in a realm of 15 years with an option to exceed is not out of the question.
Okay, thank you.
You were talking about having four bins. I think I have six right now. So I guess I'm a high user and usually use four of them every week. So I was focusing on that 61% recycled rate, and I was curious about a couple of things with that. Number one, the trend line and where that has been going over the last several years and where you project it going forward. And then secondly, how that 61% recycled rate benchmarks against other communities in New York, and then sort of nationally, where do we sit on a recycling rate?
I think that's a good question, and it's something that I think both Mark and I neglected to include in the presentation. The 61% recycling rate is one of the highest, if not the highest, in New York State. So I think we're doing pretty well when you look at other communities in New York. And I'm sorry, I forgot the rest of your question. That was my only point.
The trend line is that 61, you know, has that gone up remarkably, and do you project it continuing to increase? And where does this, I mean, not only New York State, but where does this fit sort of nationally as
well? You know, I think so I answered the part about New York State communities. I think it's been pretty static at about 61%. The one thing that OCRA is really also another value of the OCRA system is that OCRA supports state legislation that helps us kind of look at EPR, extended producer responsibility, for some of the products that we as individuals can't necessarily recycle, pull out of our waste stream at home. Part of that reduction is also looking at the products that come into this community from outside the community and thinking about ways to reduce them before they even hit the shelves and come into our homes.
I'd like to add to that. Mm-hmm. Your question is an excellent one. Florida is trying to get up to 20%. We were mandated in year one to be at 40%, and I can tell you as a facilities manager at Carrier Corporation, I told the OCRA people who came to my place, it's never going to happen, can't be done, and OCRA said, let us help you. They came in, helped us set up all the systems, and I give the citizens, which were our employees of United Technologies Carrier, the credit, because the program took off like wildfire, and we hit 42% in our first year, which is a microcosm of how this county did. Your curbside recycling is actually only about 21% of the total recyclables. But if you look at what the grocery stores, the restaurants, the commercial enterprises, the industrial enterprises that we have here, we get to a much higher number, which is currently around 61%. And that can fluctuate a few percentages either way. For example, when we had the mass exodus of the industrial people. And they were all concerned with getting as close to zero landfill as they could and all. But just by statistics or the mathematical equations, when they left, so did those great numbers, which exceeded residential. And that's not a knock on residential. They're doing a great job.
Let me also add that the climate for recycling is tough because people are reading fewer newspapers, they're thin-walling boxes and glass and all that kind of thing. So the materials that typically get recycled are getting smaller in quantity. So to maintain a 61% recycling rate means actually running faster, right, working harder just to maintain that. So it's a challenge and a complicated issue.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, and running harder and faster means keeping those education programs going and all of that marketing going, which takes money and time and resources.
I thought I was an avid recycler, but after hearing Peter, I know that I failed. Yeah, that's true. My question is this. I just downloaded an app from Wegmans so that I can go into Wegmans and punch in, I want this item, and that'll tell me where what aisle it's in. I haven't noticed on, and I haven't been on your website in a while, though I've gone on it many times. Do you have an app so that there are many times when I'm doing things and I want to know, I'm not quite sure if this belongs in the blue bin or not, and I'm not going to go and turn my computer on just to try and figure it out. So do you have an app where I can go in and punch in this is the item and yes or no?
Yes, we do. It's on our website, www.okra.org, and it basically there's a box on the left-hand side if in a search engine that says, how do I? And you'll say, recycle plastics, and it'll tell you what numbers of plastics we can recycle. Our public information officer, Kristen Lawton, is here, who developed the website. Kristen, do you have a comment on that?
It's not an app. It's a website, not an app, right, Kristen? Let me get to you.
I was just saying, it's actually technically not an app because we don't quite have the resources that Wegmans does in that area, but it's certainly a great idea for suggestion in the future. What Mark is talking about is our website has a robust search area where you can find the answer to these sorts of questions. You can Facebook us and ask us questions there as well. But that's actually a super great suggestion, so thank you.
Maybe Wegmans would fund it. All right. Wegmans, anybody here from Wegmans? Okay. Let's see. Was I over here? I was.
Mark, as you know, I'm a Vicki Baker. I was involved in this issue from day one. And when this plant was built, it was because of a so-called garbage crisis. And they were telling communities you had to build an incinerator. At that point, we had Recycle First, and we said, no, you don't really need to build an incinerator. We can recycle. And they called us a bunch of bananas because we were saying we could recycle 50, 60, 70% of your waste. We're there now. And I think what's the most troubling for me is honesty in your education programs and in your ads. Because when people see an ad that says, you might be surprised that there's a power source in your community and it's your garbage. It goes back to that same issue when the solid waste management team put out literature that said, your garbage, you put it out at the curb and it goes away, or does it? It doesn't. It doesn't go away. And people need to understand, you need to take a look at what the permit allows per year. Just take a look at it. Because meeting 20% of that, that's not so good, because that 20%, it adds up to at least 305 million pounds of hazardous material that's not on their website. It's called a hazardous air pollutants, and that has to be reported to DEC. Take a look at that, because if we're honest with the people and say, we actually do create pollution, let's all work together to minimize that pollution. The building of that plant said, too much trash was the issue. Not enough trash would not be a problem. We could shut off one of the boilers. Have you considered reducing, using two boilers to maximum and shutting off the third? As Sharon said, where are the other options? We don't know. We don't have any minutes from your meetings, but we'd like to see what those options were that you looked at.
Well, first of all, Vicki, you're not a bunch of bananas. We appreciate the environmental concerns from not only those who have provided concerns on the public comment period, but those that we talk to almost every day. That's important. And in regards to running two boilers, that's not economically feasible for the sustainability of the plant and the technology. And you mentioned in the past, we'll just say 1991 for a moment in time, which is about when the incinerator came to be, landfills were not being permitted anymore, and Seneca Meadows was looking at being closed. And obviously, with hindsight, they did get an extension. However, if you look at the EPA hierarchy, we are not interested in going backwards to landfilling. The EPA says it's environmentally less responsible than energy from waste, and we feel the same way.
I just didn't want to leave the impression that I don't believe in the waste energy concept. You know, this debate actually started in 1975 when I was in the county legislature. The first vote I made was to promote a countywide approach to this. So I'm a great believer, and I think OCRA has done an absolutely phenomenal job over the years. As a disclaimer, I have to admit, I was on the OCRA board for a number of years. But I still...
You were proud to be.
Absolutely. And but I still believe in the whole regional approach to dealing with this, and I really believe that landfilling has much greater environmental negative impacts than waste energy. And I think all you have to do is drive by the Seneca Meadows landfill and see the mountains of and imagine the methane gas that's coming out of that to appreciate what we're doing here. So I think it's a great opportunity. But I am concerned if this goes to a private solution, wouldn't that end flow control? And wouldn't that put us back into this thing where everybody does everything at the cheapest possible solution? And then wouldn't it also then limit the amount of control that we have over the environmental impact and the way the facility is operating?
Further proof that if you give somebody $20 and plant them in the audience, you get the questions that you want to have. First of all, would you like to join our board again? We could use your help.
$20.
Take me out for a beer and we'll call it even. Please rephrase the last part of your question. Could you rephrase that last part for me?
Don't we lose a lot of the public input if we go to a private solution?
Thank you. Ownership is key. Ownership means control. Now, there's many that said you promised not to import. Well, we're looking at a financial issue here where we need to be able to have, you know, there's a business side to this as well as an environmental. And we understand both, and we care deeply about the environmental side of it. But for sustainability for a solid waste system in Onondaga County, we also need to consider the financial part very strongly. Today, there's a default arrangement where private ownership could happen. We have an extremely strong county legislature saying we will not relinquish that control, up to and including eminent domain. So with what the default is today, which is the market rate agreement, which is contractual property of Covanta today, we're saying to Covanta, we prefer a service agreement similar to what we have today. We want the oversight of well-educated people maintaining a consistent checks and balances with that facility to make sure they're not just operating within permits or compliant with health risk assessments, but well below that. And our opportunities are threefold. We can go with the default arrangement, which is not acceptable on any level of government that I've spoken to. We can extend the service agreement, which we would want some certain things, and of course a privately held company wants certain things, money. And then there's eminent domain, in which case we would take control of the facility and we could either operate it ourselves or solicit bids for competent suppliers to operate the facility for us. I can tell you right now that the default gets very little attention from us. We are focusing on parallel paths to either own the facility outright or continue a service agreement. That gives the legislature full control over the community's materials, the plant, and truthfully, OCRA.
Thank you, Mark Donnelly, Chris Dodson, and Amy Miller, and Kristen Lawton. Thank you.
Thank you.